Так? I think the issue of transport, surely you can fit in a much more respectable space this side than that side is usually reserved for the prosecution and its witnesses. We would like to welcome National Treasure. These are the main people we were having today. And also welcome the Directors General who are here with us from the various departments. We will start and start by way of introduction for the officials who are here, as well as members of parliament, and then we'll kick start. I hope we all have copies of the program. In case you don't, please do indicate so that it can be made available to you. Right, we'll just start on my immediate left. I'll bring you the Director General.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. My name is Lionel October. I'm the Director General of Department of Trade and Industry.
Good morning. My name is Mpho Ramatla. I'm the acting CFO of DTI.
Good morning. Jody Scott, Group COO, the DTI.
Morning, Fritz Fritz, DTI, Working Office of the CFO.
Good morning, we're working for the Director General of DTI.
Good morning, I'm the CFO of Home Affairs.
Good morning, I'm the DG for Home Affairs.
Good morning, Devin Naidu, Head of Economic Services, National Treasury.
Morning, my name is Ken Terry. I'm the Acting COO in the Presidency.
Good morning, my name is Gillian Wilson, National Treasury.
Good morning, DG Mpumimpofu, Secretary for Defense.
Good morning, my name is Nzonge Labantu, Chief Financial Officer. Defense.
Morning. My name is George Mashalela, DG of Transport.
Good morning. My name is Rachel Mduru from National Treasury.
Good morning. I'm Philip from Scalpec, National Treasury.
Good morning. My name is Terence Rasaroka, Deputy Commissioner, Correctional Services.
Good morning. My name is Tom Oyani, DG. Correctional Services.
Good morning, Marissa Muller, National Treasury Public Finance.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Sipiwe Sokela, the Chief Financial Officer.
I'm Linda Bond, Deputy Commissioner, Human Resource Development, DPS.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Nandi Mareka, Deputy Commissioner for Financial and Management Accounting.
All right. Can we have comrades introducing themselves? Starting in the Eastern Cape.
Ndiyabulela from Lom. Dimuno Simo Palindela, Ilungile Komiti.
Everybody, Naren Singh, member of SCOPA.
I'm member Anshan Dreyer, member of SCOPA.
Morning, I'm Gertrude Sal, member of SCOPA.
My name is Lorraine Mashiani.
Morning, I'm Tapelo Chilwane, member of Sikopa.
Morning, I'm Eunice Nyalongo, member of Sikopa.
Good morning, I am Ruth Bengo. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Transport.
Morning, I'm Faith Mutambi, member of Sikopa.
Dumela Mbakhaiso, Kimen Tewale Matlaji.
Good morning. My name is Winnie Ngwenya, member of Portfolio Committee on Correctional Services. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm Comrade Temba Godi. I chair the committee. Our primary engagement today is with National Treasury. We with National Treasury yesterday. Blessed again with your presence today, if it was possible tomorrow as well, Friday and every other day. to basically deal with the unauthorized expenditures of the six listed departments. We want to thank the Director General who has made it, because we felt that in the process of our engagement with the National Treasurer, if there are issues pertaining to your part of the unauthorized expenditure for which we may seek engagement or clarification, it is only correct that the affected departments will be here to give whatever additional information or whatever responses that might be necessary, being that the National Treasury cannot necessarily respond on everything that relates to your department. So, I don't know who is going to lead the presentation from National Treasury, but let us go according to our program. We deal with each department and check if comrades have questions that you can respond to or that the department itself can or should respond to, after which we can then move to the next department. We have six departments. I'm very certain that we're going to have an early morning today. So let me hand it over to you, National Treasurer.
Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, I'm going to start with the Department of Home Affairs.
Can I just make a request before you start? Please, we had serious challenges of compliance yesterday. Can we please ensure that our cellular phones are off? Because even if it's on silent, as long as it rings, the recording is affected. Nothing is being recorded. I don't think that's a very difficult, you know, request to make. Please just switch off your cellular phone. Please. All right. No, it's fine. May continue.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm going to start with the Department of Home Affairs, unauthorized expenditure. For the financial year 2005-2006, the department has had a total unauthorized expenditure of 97.2 million. Now, that amount can be divided up into two parts. The department had a over expenditure of 53 million for the 2005-2006 financial year. The over expenditure relates to a ICT project in the department, more specifically the back record convention project. And on the analysis of the expenditure of the department, we discovered that that expenditure happened in the last quarter of the financial year. So we had an engagement with the department to exactly find out why that expenditure only happened in the last quarter. But I think the department can maybe explain to the committee. We didn't get a satisfactory response on that. So there was then an over expenditure of 53 million in the 2005-2006 financial year. The second part is the unauthorized expenditure of 46.8 million, which relates to an amount that was earmarked for capital expenditure, and the department utilized that money for current expenditure without prior approval of National Treasury. So department gave us a letter to say they are putting certain measures in place to prevent them from happening happening again, but we are not sure what steps have been taken against the person that actually or the accountable person in the department, and I think the department can give more clarity on that. The recommendation of National Treasury to the committee is that we recommend that total amount of unauthorized expenditure is recovered from the department's baseline, that we don't condone the expenditure, and the department should actually work that in and within the future baseline budget of the department. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Is there any clarification question that comrades would have that might need to be responded to? And of course, appreciating DG that the matters we're talking to precede your presence in the department. However, accountability is departmental, not. Although that does place some limitations in a way, but Dreyer and Singh.
Mr. Chairman, yes, based on your comment just now regarding accountability, I'd like to know who was the Director General at the time of this over expenditure. Mr. Chen, there's a reason for asking this information because I believe we should then consider consequences to the director who was responsible for that.
I was distracted. Can you repeat the question so I can also follow?
Mr. Chairman, my question is, who was the Director General at the time of this over-expenditure? And once we've got that information, there's a reason for this question, is so that we can consider possible actions against this DG. And it's in the motivation for this is that we can hold that person to account. We've been talking about accountability all along, and it's time that we put those words into action.
Who was the DG at that time?
At that time, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. The DG at that time was Ambassador Maketuka.
Yeah, do you have a follow-up question?
I want to propose that we call in that person to appear before this committee to explain his actions.
All right. I'll head you. See?
Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody. What I'd like to know from Treasury, and this is directed at Treasury, we have many examples here of unauthorized expenditure. This one is a 2005-2006. When we go to the next one, you'll find that it's a 2004-2005. Why does it take such a long time for these matters to be brought before committees? Because I think the question that colleague Dreyer is asking is relevant to the extent that, you know, the person's responsible may not even be around. We don't know if this person is underground or above ground or whatever. I mean, I don't know about this ambassador. So I'd just like to ask a general question. Why does it take such a long time for these matters to be brought to our attention or to be dealt with by the department and National Treasury?
Well, I hope that's the last general question, because I want us to be a bit sharply focused. But if that will ensure that we don't have that question arising in the other reports, then it's fine. Is it possible to have this brought before us a little earlier than maybe has thus far been the case?
I think it is possible, but I think in most cases unauthorized expenditure is highlighted by the Auditor General in the annual reports, and then the department should write a letter to National Treasury to ask that action be taken against, or what action should be taken against unauthorized expenditure. That can take some time for the department to actually write to National Treasury. And then I think in most of the cases there was a scope of meeting already on this. But when the scope of meeting was held, either the department never wrote to National Treasury to ask how this unauthorized expenditures should be treated. And also I think engagements between National Treasury and the department to find out exactly what are the facts around the unauthorized expenditure also can take some time to finalize.
Notwithstanding the work that has got to be done around resolving the problem, but if we are sitting here in 2011, dealing with an unauthorized expenditure of 2005-2006, it's unacceptable, Chairperson. Does it take so long for departments to react, or the National Treasury itself to deal with the matters at hand? What is the actual problem? Thank you.
All right. I suppose the point that is being made is... And I think the call is to the department. Once they have an unauthorized expenditure determined by the Auditor General, they need to act with speed to National Treasury. If they don't, or if they didn't, I believe, and I guess there's very little that National Treasury can do. So I think maybe it might be a general call we're making that things brought before us should be a little more fresher than have hitherto been the case. I would want, is it Home Affairs? Or is it not general? Okay, sure.
Thank you, Chair. As Treasury has reported that there was no satisfactory explanation with regard to the 53 million. I think now it's time that the department explain to us what actually happened. Secondly, with regard to the 46.8 million also, normally in SCOPA we consider an authorized expenditure, and definitely the department appeared then. So apart from the initial proposal from the colleague from the DA, I think the department could have also made some efforts to make sure that the money of 48.6 million is recovered. So we want to know, bearing in mind that indeed the current DG was not there, but this the problem that you found when you joined the department, what did you do to ensure that you recover this 46.8 million? Thank you, Chair.
I don't want to answer for you. Maybe.
No, again, Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members, as a Department of Home Affairs, we're here to present why the department had unauthorized expenditure. Chair, as this is an old matter, I think it would be important for me to give the background and the context of it in order for the committee to have an understanding. Chair, in 2004-05 financial year, the department allocated 92 million for the implementation of a bed record conversion project. Then the service provider was appointed in September 2004. Then for a period of 5 months, the department was involved in the preparation stages for the project because it deals with the fingerprints of the population of the country. So it had to be done in a short manner. So in the 2004-05, there was no much work which was done in the delivery of the project. The project only commenced in March of 2005. That meant that 92 million, which was allocated for 2004-05, was not spent. Then the department had a saving in that year of about 389 million, inclusive of that 92 million rand. As a normal procedure, the department submitted the request for a rollover of that 92 million rand because the contract was signed in September 2004. Therefore, there was an obligation to the service provider. Then, Chair, as we know that the issue of the adjustment estimates are decided around about October of the year. Now, in that 2005-06, in the baseline of the department, 132 million was allocated for the project. Then, in August 2005, National Treasury approved, I think that point is very important, National Treasury approved an amount out of that 389 million which was requested. Treasury approved an amount of 97 million, however, to be reserved for this project. 46 million was for the back records conversion. 51 million was for the goods and services. So in that rollover, there was a 97 million which was reserved for the department. However, the amount, there was a condition that this amount will be allocated in the department if the spending trends of the department shows that is going to overspend. Because from Treasury, there was still a feeling that the department might underspend as in the previous year. So there was that condition. Now, so then the amount was going to be allocated then in the adjustment estimate period. Then, because of that project, the department spent 226 million rand in the project. So what means that is that 132 million was in the baseline amount. And then from there, the department within its savings paid the 54 million rand. And that left that over expenditure now of 37 million. But the mistake which was done by the department was not to go back to Treasury and say, you reserved 46 million rand for this project. Can you allocate it? So the money in principle was there, but there was a condition. Then when the department now spent that money, and again this thing goes with the time frames, because if you didn't do that prior to the adjustment process, because a treasurer doesn't allocate money outside that process. So by the time they were spending that money, it was outside the process. So that's how then now the 37 million came about. Then, Chair, there was another amount, which is the 15 million for goods and services. It's a similar issue, as I said, that 50,
an amount of 51 million was allocated, reserved, because there was an acknowledgement from Treasury that there are suppliers who were already committed, but they were not paid before end of March. So the department on that overspend on goods and services over by the 15.73 million. Then, Chair, coming to the 46 million. 46 million, again, maybe is a misinterpretation of PFMA or National Treasury regulations from the department, in the sense that the 46 million was allocated to capital. Then they took the money to pay for licenses. There's always a problem for people to interpret as software and licenses. Licenses does not meet the requirement of a software, but people, they tend to misinterpret that. So the money was taken from capital to pay for licenses, thinking that it is a software, because the software is part of your capital. But that was the problem. So when Auditor General was auditing the books of the department, said that classification is wrong to classify licenses as a software. So the money was there in that instance, but it's just that it was the allocation which was wrong from the part of the department. So, Chair, we are saying that, yes, it is not right for the department that it has overspent on its budget. We are saying that the department did approach National Treasury for a rollover. National Treasury did approve the reserving of the money for the project. But the mistake which was done by the department is to source those funding. Hence, Chair, we are saying on the part which we discussed with National Treasury, on the part that the department must fund this amount out of its baseline amount. Chair, in the 2004-05 financial year, the department did return 389 million to the fiscal. And the National Treasury, Chair, did reserve the 97 million for the department based on what was returned back. However, there was a mistake to go and request that money at the right time. And Chair, considering where the Department of Home Affairs is, a 96 million rand will have a major impact in the operations of the department, which, Chair, we have not yet turned the corner as the department. We are still trying to give the services to the citizens of this country, which they deserve. So we really say, Chair, would like the committee to consider the issue of condoning of this expenditure. I think, Chair, for now, I'm...
You've rest your case. Okay. Well, I think what the DG has done is to give more flesh to the points that have already been raised by National Treasury. So I would not want us to belabor the point, but I would allow comrades to raise issues if there are issues that they want to raise. Matladi, Comrade Shilwane, and Val, yes.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Briefly.
I'm very brief. I'm listening to the DG. He's talking about saving. I would like him to explain to me the difference between saving and underspending.
because to me, those two are totally different. If you have budgeted to deliver services to the nation that you're talking about, and you fail to deliver that service, the money is not used for that financial year, then you call it a saving. I do not agree. That's why I would like you to explain what you mean when you say during that year, Home Affairs had a saving of 300 million. And Chairperson, finally to say, you keep on saying it was a mistake. It was a mistake that we did not go back to Treasury and say to them, give us the money that you have promised. How do you correct that mistake? Or how have you corrected it? Because it's too expensive.
Okay, Shula.
Thank you, Chairperson. Probably maybe before we say agree to condone check, I just want to check with the department to establish on whether there was any value for money for that project which was anticipated. I know maybe, Chair, it was going to be possible if the members from the portfolio committee were here to check on whether. But just to check, there was any value for money for that project. And how is the spend of that project? Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Having listened to the explanation from the DG and also taking into consideration the turnaround that the Department of Home Affairs has been engaged in, I would like to, from where I'm seated, request the committee to agree to condone this expenditure. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. As I listened to the DG, that it said that the money was overspent, and now for me it's a good thing if money is if the budget is overspent unless it's underspent. But my question is, why didn't the department report to National Treasury that you promised the money, and in the meantime, we go on with the project, but now the money is short. Why didn't they take more than 15 years not to report to the National Treasury because they overspent it? It's too long, Chair, that they, year after year, they can't say to the National Treasury, we done that with the money. This matter will be long ago finished there if they report what was wrong with reporting to the National Treasury about that money. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm just going to follow up on colleague Mashiane. You know, the DG himself has admitted that they've erred. Now, Treasury had to pick up that error. I don't think we should condone all of this amount. I think Treasury and the Department should go back and look at how much can be condoned, and that portion which should not be condoned can be staggered. I don't think, because they make a proposal here, that it should be once-off or staggered. And I don't think if it's staggered, it's going to have such a major impact on the Department's operations as we move forward. So maybe we need a little bit more to be done in this rather than just say yes or no.
Yeah, I think on the question of approval, comrades, we're not going to take decisions here and now. Try call National Treasury to come and make input. We'll still have occasion where we'll sit down and say, having listened to everything, what do we say? And I think maybe our focus should be more, because National Treasury has done its investigation. So whatever recommendation they come up to is a product of investigation and the application of the law. So it should not be looked at lightly. But there were a few questions that were asked. Would you like to respond to them, DJ?
Chairperson, I think the issue of saving and underspending, I think, let me accept that when I meant by save, I was meaning underspend, but it's a word which I think maybe I've used it wrongly. But I understand what savings means and what underspending means. So there was an underspending of 389 million in the department. Then, Chair, the issue of how we're going to correct the mistake. I think, Chair, firstly for us, that we have acknowledged that there is a mistake. Hence, we wrote a letter to National Treasurer. Chair, when joined the department in October 2009, we found these issues. I was a CFO at that time. And then we followed the process. We wrote the letter to National Treasurer to correct this. So the letter was sent in order to correct this matter. Value for money, Chair, this project was converting the manual fingerprints into electronic fingerprints. As we know that the Department of Home Affairs is the custodian of the fingerprints. Police, they come to our database. Everybody go to that database of Home Affairs. So that system is still there. The country is relying on that database. So, Chair, it is still a project which we are proud of as a Department of Home Affairs, because now anyone is able now to access our fingerprint electronically, whereas previously it was a manual process. Chair, as we indicated that, it was not, we reported this matter to National Treasury with a view of it being resolved. The letter which came from the department was to request National Treasury to help us to put this on the agenda of SCOPA, as we know that the issue of unauthorized expenditure can only be cleared through the committee SCOPA.
Right. Thank you very much. As I said, TG and National Treasury, we will certainly, having listened and gone through the presentation, at some point need to say how do we resolve this matter so that we can submit it before Parliament for resolution. Either way. Can we move to the next report, please, which is trade and industry.
Good morning, Honourable Chairman and members of the committee and Directors General and officials. We table before the committee Vote 35, Department of Trade and Industry, unauthorized expenditure for the 2004-2005 financial year. And it is our objective this morning to provide the Standing Committee on Public Accounts with a recommendation by National Treasury on such unauthorized expenditure by the department incurred in that financial year. The Department of Trade and Industry has furnished National Treasury with detailed information regarding the unauthorized expenditure booked under the financial year 04 and 05. And we would like to beg the indulgence of the committee for this delay. This would have been reported in the financial year 04-05 and published in the annual report. We've had two major issues. The one was having to trace the relevant documentation from National Treasury side, and that remains our dilemma. The second was, in tracing the documentation, we've had to go through all of the details and pursue all of the checks and balances inside the divisions inside National Treasury, and hence the delay. We've succeeded in finalizing this matter earlier this year. As reported by the Department of Trade and Industry and as reflected in the annual report dated 31 March 05, the unauthorized expenditure by the department for the year amounted to 37.3 million rands. I shall round up the numbers for ease. And according to the department, this comprised of the following items. The largest being 31.1 million rands in respect of the DTI General Export Incentive Scheme, debts being written off. Two, an amount of 6.1 million rands being compensation in terms of a bilateral investment treaty between South Africa and Switzerland. Three, 125,000 rands for staff debts being written off, and four being 25,000 rands for other debts being written off. In terms of the detail, the first being the amount of 25,000 rands, the Department of Trade and Industry lost an arbitration award following the dismissal of an official following a disciplinary hearing. The matter was referred to the CCMA and the award was granted. 15,000 rand to the South African Labour Market and Allied Workers Union and 10,000 rand to the General Public Service Sector Bargaining Council. Both these amounts were paid by the department on 25 August 2004. Second amount for 125,000 rands addresses an irrecoverable personnel and former personnel debt. We are advised by the department that with the resignation of staff, various debts are recorded, booked, and such debts include amounts for travel, subsistence, salary overpayments, tax obligations, state guarantee, and bursary obligations. Most of such debts are recovered from pension benefits. But in some instances, debts are not fully recovered for several reasons. The one is that the debtors cannot be retraced. Two, the cost of debt recovery might exceed the debt in question. And three, recovery of the debt causes undue hardship to the debtor and dependents. The next item refers to the 31.1 million rands in respect of the General Export Incentive Scheme debt, which is irrecoverable. The Minister of Trade and Industry introduced the General Export Incentive Scheme in April 1990. And the companies claimed incentives from the department under the scheme of arrangements. Amounts are paid on the strength of a claim which are supported by an audit report. And the department within 5 years has sent inspectors to verify export documentation. Overpayments are identified and legal actions were instituted against the companies in question. The list of irrecoverable debts include the following. One, Cape Country Wines, 157,000 rands. The company cannot be traced. Two, Blue Continent Products, 292,000 rands, following an out-of-court settlement. Three, Snowchem, 33,000 rands. The company could not be traced and the debt was prescribed. Four, Rico Export, 758,000 rands. The company could not be traced. Five, Gerald Garments, 402,000 rands. The company closed down and the director has relocated back to Taiwan. Six, Agar Pipe Suppliers,
83,000 rand, a settlement offer was accepted. 7. Glenvale, 80,000 rand, a settlement offer was accepted. 8. Selvale, 33,000 rand, a settlement offer was accepted. 9. Nantex Textiles, 439,000 rand, a settlement offer was accepted. Anglo American Farms, 299,000 rand, a settlement offer was accepted. ABB Powertech Transformers, 1.78 million rand, a settlement offer was accepted. SA Business and Trade, 63,000 rand, a settlement offer was accepted. Sugar Technology and Equipment International, 377,000 rand, a settlement offer was accepted. Monopumped, a division of Abatech Industries, 19,000 rand, the company could not be traced. The Natural Corporation, 7,000 rand, a settlement offer was accepted. Nestle South Africa, 4.1 million rand, a settlement offer was accepted. Clifton Industries, 444,000 rand, a settlement offer was accepted. Simplicity Corporation, 750,000 rand. The company had no movable assets, and the decision was to write the debt off. RD&G Export Marketing, 2.5 million. Company had no movable assets. Collindale Cannery, 8.3 million rand. A settlement offer was accepted. Eternal Manufacturing, 10.1 million. A default judgment was granted, which stands for 30 years. Finally, Ballistic Body Armor, a settlement offer of 19,900 rand was accepted. The final amount of 6.1 million represents a claim against the DTI by Pumlani Lodge in terms of a Article 3 of the bilateral treaty between South Africa and Switzerland. And according to the claimant, there was a violation of Article 3 in that there was a failure to offer full protection and security to the investor. The original amount claimed was 10.1 million Swiss francs, the rand equivalent of which was 60 million at the time. The final award in damages was 6.5 million plus interest. The total amount paid by the Department of Trade and Industry to the claimant was dated 2 February 05. For an amount of 15.7 million rand in respect of capital, legal costs, and interest. The payment was partially funded by on-budget vote, and an interest portion was regarded as a loss. Having investigated the matter, we have satisfied ourselves that this, in all material and reasonable and fair respects, reflects the findings of the Treasury. We conclude that the unauthorized expenditure suggests that this expenditure was beyond the department's reasonable control. The irrecoverable debts are monitored closely by the department as well as National Treasury to ensure the appropriate control mechanisms are in place. We have engaged with the Department of Trade and Industry on all of these matters, and we are of the conclusion that this represents the actual amount in question. And in line with provision of Section 34(1)(a) of the PFMA, we recommend that the amount of 37,379,505 rand 54 cents be considered by the Standing Committee as a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund to cover the overspending of the DTI vote. And we remain on standby to address any questions and concerns the committee may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Kumbuchulwan, Nyalungu, Mangena, and then Dreyer.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to address my first question to the Treasurer on the recoverables from personal and ex-personal debts on the reasons, actually. I'm just worried by the last reasons that the recovery will cause undue hardships to the debtor or his or her dependents. Really, I don't think this reason will rather go well to us as this committee and probably to most South Africans who are unemployed. I don't know, maybe the National Treasurer will help to explain further what does the department mean when they say due to hardships. What hardships for a tax man is something that it doesn't. The second one, I'm not sure whether the Treasurer will be able to answer, but I think the department is the trade and industry. The ones on the companies which are not traced to check, I think if I remember very well, I think there's a law which was recently the Minister of Finance was talking about that companies which have not done the work are going to be blacklisted. And because I think the other reason that could make companies not to be traced, there's a tendency of officials or people working within the department to have their own companies. Hence the reason you can't trace them. Just to check on whether the department or the treasurer, the national treasurer, to check on whether these companies have been blacklisted. Not the companies as the name, as it stands, but probably the directors, because the company could not be traced that belongs to Tabelo Chulwan, that is called Ramore, the transport. Tabelo is the director. Then next week I'll go and have another company that is called Mangena Transport, the director being Tabelo Chulwan. So I just want to check on that note, that how really that one can be, so that it can be addressed, because people will, they move in and out. They say it's a movement. I don't know movement of what. Just to check on that one. Maybe the department also will expatiate on that one. Thank you.
Chairperson, Honorable Chulwan has said some of the things that I wanted to say. You know, I'm really worried, especially when a person resigns. No, not about Mangena Transport. She knows I've got that one. You know, all these other things, I do understand them. But when it comes to a person who resigns from the department, that one is obvious. They know this person, and they are overpayment somewhere. They know the person very well. And when the person is leaving, I mean, he doesn't leave today, and then tomorrow everything is fixed for that person. What they were supposed to do is just to make sure that they get the money from that person's pension. And the issue of saying that the children, the beneficiaries will suffer, I mean, this person knew very well from the beginning that if I use this money, I must just take it back, otherwise my kids are going to be sick. As she's saying that, it's very simple, really, very, very simple. If maybe somebody can go out and become a CID, whatever you call it, if I can take these things and go out, I'll get the names of the owners. I'll get the names and I can come with them and tell you that this one belongs to Mutambi. This one belongs to Mama Clark. It's very simple, but just because the department knows those people, you have to do otherwise to make sure that those people are not arrested. And yet here we want money, that's all. There's a lot of money that has just gone into the drain. You can't just get into the river to retrieve that money from a crocodile that has gone into the river. It's very difficult. Otherwise, you'll be killed. Chairperson, let us really be serious here. I'm not talking about the condonement, about anything. Treasury will come, as you are saying, to sit down with us, and then we'll talk about it.
Yalu, and then prayer.
Thank you, Chair. My colleagues have already said what I wanted to say. Mine was the decision by the department. What department do to discover this money? What we need is only money that is lost here. It can't be traced. Other stories can be had maybe later, but now we're dealing with the money here and we want it back. So I want to check what the department is doing to get this money back. As Mama Sarah has already said, and the decision by the treasurer, your decision, the treasurer, is to leave all like this, or is there any measures? Have you taken any steps to find out or to get this untraced company? Thank you.
Raya, then Mutambi. Yeah, Raya.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems that this one sentence, the recovery would cause undue hardships to the debtor or his or her dependents, is finding general agreement amongst the committee members, because that's the one I highlighted here as well. It doesn't go down very well. And I see that it's been well covered. I just want to ask, has it been considered that the recovery or the non-recovery would cause undue hardship to the taxpayer and his or her dependents? The taxpayer has been bled to death, keep on paying with more and more and more taxes, while government officials are seen to be wasting money at the cost of the taxpayer. So this sentiment doesn't go down very well, and we should start considering this is taxpayers' money, and we're the trustees of that money. And then the second question, has a settlement offer not been considered in this, where it refers to it would cause undue hardships?
Okay. Zambi, then Mashiane, balancing things. So let's just keep it short and pointed.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is to National Reserve itself. They've acknowledged that DTI wrote them a letter dated 18 August 2005. And then the delay for the report, it was based on their own system within the treasury itself to say the tracing of the relevant documentation. I want to check now from treasury itself, have you improved your system? Because one of your roles is to assist this department to comply. But if you are not leading from the front yourself, then it's a bit problematic. If you try to put your house in order to make sure that when departments submit, then documents are processed timeously. The other one is on this claim against DTI. It's your corporate governance issues, IGR relations, to say here the claim was solely based on the check, and it could have costed the department a lot of money, like you said, 60 million. This is to DGI. Have you improved your IGR relations with the other sector departments? Because this is due to, okay, in future, because you still have a relations with other countries where other sector departments need to also come and contribute. Have you improved your communications with the other sector departments? The other one is with regard to, say, the debts prescribed. In essence, somewhere, someone in the department didn't do his job in time to make sure that this prescription doesn't occur. What mechanisms have you put in place to make sure that when debt are due, they are collected, and then you are not faced with the issue of prescription? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. One on the point number two, irrecoverable personnel and ex-personnel debt. Can we have a breakdown of that money linked to a person's name and the year so that we make an informed decision? Two on the same. The recovery of debt would be uneconomical. I don't understand that. What does that mean? Every cent in this country is very important for service delivery. If I owe government 2 cents, it's coming back and doing what it is supposed to do is very important. Whether it was a rent that was supposed to be recovered, it must be recovered. I don't understand that sentence. I'm not going to the one on the department. In terms of point three, General Export Incentive Scheme debt, 31 million. I see you have a list of the companies and the amounts and the reasons. My interest would be more on the years in which these happened. If we can also have that in writing. On the points that I've noted, Chairperson, I would request that the department gives us more flesh. Thank you.
Falk, and then Sink.
Thank you. The member has alluded from my questions, but I got two short questions. Maybe I was not in, but maybe it is already up, it's fine. For me, short and simple, Chair, staff debts written off. I don't understand that. Where is the staff? Why is it written off? The other one is salary overpayment. I mean, I don't understand that also. Your salary is your salary. Did the staff borrow money from the department and it's fine, you can't deduct the money, something like that. The other one, Chair, is other debts written off. Other debts written off. What debts? In plain Afrikaans, I don't say, for the debt, flat and simple. Excuse me, let me the Chair, as please, thank you, bye-bye.
Thank you for that.
Go for it.
Chairperson,
Go for it, come on.
No. Chairperson, my question is directed to the department. Now, the scheme was introduced in 1990. A lot of water has flown under the bridge. But what I'd like to know from the department, are there similar kind of schemes in operation now? What lessons have you learned from this 31 million run here that we're going to write off? Vis-a-vis the fact that 20 years from now, maybe definitely others will be sitting here in Scopa. And you might come along and say, well, we couldn't trace Ma Mangena's company or Ma Mashiana's company or Singh's company. And that brings me to the second question. I'm not entirely convinced that it was beyond the department's reasonable control to trace some of these people. I mean, these are individuals. They granted them the incentives. There were audit reports. I think at that time we even had identity numbers. They were not the 800 numbers, but they were ID numbers. Because some of these people, I mean, if we
just let them off the hook. They might be looking around and they'll be laughing all the way to the bank to say, listen, we got this incentive and we moved from address one to address two. The department didn't do enough to trace us and we'll apply for another incentive. Which brings me to colleague Mashiana's point, I mean, Shilwana's point about blacklisting. Because Singh could have been one of the people that benefited from the scheme at that time. But he moved province or moved address. And what controls do we have? How are we going to avoid this kind of thing in the future? So I'm not convinced that it was beyond the department's reasonable control. More could have been done to trace some of these people. And we need the names. I just want to follow. We need some of the names of the bigger ones. These people who've gone to Taiwan. The other ones with the million rand and more than a million rand. We need to know who they are. Thanks.
What I think for me might need to be cleared is the general export incentive scheme debt. The amounts that are reflected, are those the amounts that were owing or are those the settlement amounts? If those are the amounts owing, what was the settlement offer? If what is reflected here is a settlement offer, what was the actual amount owed? But I also do want to caution comrades, or maybe just to point out that these unauthorized expenditure appeared in the 2004-2005 financial year. And on the general export incentive scheme, you would note that this scheme was introduced in 1990. So it happened before liberation. And immediately thereafter, so within 5 years, the department then instituted an investigation to check whether did we pay the right people the right amount and discovered that there was a lot of fraud. And, you know, sometimes the extent to which the department could act would obviously be dependent on the balance of forces at that time. Who were the officials who were running that department? Who were the officials in key positions? And what were their relations with the culprits? So I'm just saying at the political level, so that we don't just look at it administratively, have an appreciation of what is the context. But can we get responses to the questions that have been asked?
Thank you, Honourable Chair, members of the committee. The question of hardships is indeed a very subjective one. It is a fact of the practice, the convention, that when amounts are called into question, it is often a judgment that is being made for X thousand rands, whether it would be worth the while spending the resources chasing after a small debt. The details, you know, of that, we would certainly be have to interact with the department to be able to furnish the committee with the specifics of individuals. I do not have that information at my disposal today, but would be beg indulgence of the committee to request and to have necessary time to engage with the department and come back or make submit that information. In respect of directors' liability, and frequently the companies are established by individuals and the companies are juristic persons who are sued in the name of the companies. The individuals can, of course, escape that. And that is perhaps an area that we need to focus on to ensure that such escape routes do not permit, as described by the members. Over the years, the Office of the Accountant General and the Department Treasury Finance, Public Finance Division, have instituted a great number of improvements in the systems to ensure that such debts are tracked down, and only when we can reasonably satisfy ourselves that we draw the conclusions that we have done today, we actually make these recommendations. In respect of personnel expenditure, it's easy to recover amounts when staff members due to overpayments or bursary obligations or similar have moved within the government service, and to ensure that the necessary funds are tracked down and repaid. It becomes very difficult when persons have left the government employment, and to do so again with frequently a judgment call to ensure that, you know, necessary resources are consistent with the amount of the debt in question. The final question regarding the settlement amount and the original debt in question refers to information that I do not have at my disposal today, and would be pleased to discuss this with the department to ensure that information can be supplied at a later date. Later date, thank you.
Yeah, but I think there's something very basic that should be able to talk to. The amounts that are reflected, are they the settlement amounts, or are they the amounts owed, that were owed?
The amounts in question refer to the settlements, actual settlement amounts. There might be a difference between a settlement amount and an original debt. Difference is not information that I have today.
But the amounts that are reflected here, what do they add up to?
The total amount is 31.1 million.
So these are the amounts that were paid by this company?
Yes, it reflects the amount that was paid by the department in the settlement.
Who are paying here? The point I'm asking is, if 31 million was the amount paid by the department, now I'm going back now to the irrecoverable debts that were written off. The amounts like Cape Country Wine, okay, let's take this one, Anglo-American Farm, 299,000. This amount, is it what Anglo-American paid back? Or is this the amount that they owed the department, or the amount that they were paid?
Could I check, could I confer with the department to address this, Chairman? It refers to the amount that the department was not able to recover and was written off accordingly.
So there is a settlement figure in the case where a settlement was accepted, which should be given to us. Yes, DG.
Thank you. Sorry, Mr. Chair. Just to clarify, the way the GUY scheme worked, it was incentive payments to the companies. So, as I said, I mean, much more than that was paid to companies. As you indicated, after 5 years of the scheme, the new Minister of Trade and Industry lodged the investigation into any potential overpayments or fraudulent claims that was made. The amount of the auditors discovered 31 million, which is the amount of, let's say, payments which wasn't legitimately claimed. The matter was then handed to the to Department of Justice to recover these amounts from the companies, and the legal action was taken against all the companies, save those one or the three or four that was not traced. Then, as I said, in different cases the state attorney recommended a settlement of the matter, and that is reflected. But we had to then write off the amount of 30 million, which was the extent of the overpayment, if one could call it, to these companies.
So what is not reflected here is the settlement, the actual settlement.
All right. I mean, it refers to the net bad debt written off by the department.
South Africa, 4.1 million. Can the department respond to the other questions? Well, like I indicated, it's important to understand the context. I mean, the export incentives in 1999 was essentially a function busting activity incentive. Anyway,
thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'll just try to cover the questions raised. Firstly, with regard to the staff overpayments and the concerns raised by members, let me firstly deal with the issue of it's not economic to recover the amount. Firstly, out of the 15 cases that we are dealing with, three of it, it was on the advice of Department of Justice or the State Attorney. It was recommended that we don't pursue these claims. And here it was because the amount was too small and the cost of recovery would exceed the amount. And the three cases we refer to, and I'll hand the full list to the committee, but a Mr. Nobanda, the amount outstanding, the amount, let's say, overpaid was 431 rand. The other one is Mr. Mtembu, which is 313 rand, and a Mr. De Bruyn, which is 289 rand. It is only in those cases that it was indicated that it would not be economically to claim that amount, and as indicated, these people had left the department. The other question raised is the three cases, again, out of the 15, there was three cases where the Director General at the time, because of undue hardship, decided to, let's say, condone this. And as I said, I'll hand this list to the committee, but they are fully recorded. The first one is a Mr. Magadla. He was transferred to the department with the integration of the former TBVC states into the national departments. Then in May 94, a recalculation of his salary was done, and it was discovered that he was underpaid by amount of 35,000. He was paid this 35,000. Subsequently, after his retirement, after 29 years of service, it was discovered that the pension fund contribution allocation was not deducted from that amount. And that amount came to 4,500 rand, and it was then in that case the Director General decided to not pursue that money for that pension contribution. Partly it was also because, as I said, it was the department's failure not to deduct that pension contribution from the employee. The second case is one of a Mr. Sasa. He was a driver in the ministry. And as you know, people attached to ministers, they get an allowance. And in this case, it was discovered that the allowance he was put on the wrong notch, and an amount of 22,000 was overpaid. Again, in that case, the Director General, given the position of the employee, decided not to pursue that matter. And the third one is a Mr. or a Mrs. De Bruyn. There was a salary overpayment. This is also linked to the other one of 289 rand, where, again, both in this particular case, again, it was the Director General decided not to pursue the matter, and that was, I think, more on the grounds of it was uneconomical to recover. So there was, after the 15 cases, there was, let's say, five cases where it was written off. All the others was handed to the State Attorney. It was recovered. The amount that was recovered was the capital amount and not the interest. So the 120,000 is mainly the interest payments, say for those five cases. The amount is, we recovered all the capital amounts from the employees concerned, or deducted it from their pension money. But but as I said, the bulk of that amount reflects the interest that would have been paid on that. Chairman, if I can then turn to the issue of tracing of companies. As I indicated, the GUI scheme came into effect in 1990. Many of the companies that received these were in your former, what was called decentralized areas or homelands, Botshabelo, Tabanchu, and the former homeland areas. And many of them were also, a large proportion of them were also Taiwanese companies who, as you know, are very footloose, and many of them, as I said, usually after they get the incentives, they usually back up and move to the next country and so on. But in terms of this matter, as I said, the overpayments, or let's say that was made to these companies, or the fraudulent claims, was initiated by the Minister of Trade and Industry, who was Minister Trevor Manuel at that point. He initiated the investigation, and the matter was handed to the Department of Justice to pursue these companies. As I said, the bulk of the companies was traced. There was a few cases where they could not be traced. Have we learned the lessons of that? Yes, the department, as I indicated, after that, we do have a range of incentive schemes. Those incentive schemes, what we've done is firstly to tighten up the rules around the payment of under these schemes. Secondly, there's also an adjudication committee that sits, which is also interdepartmental. We have, for example, representatives of SARS, representatives of National Treasury on these committees, which approves these particular payments. There are also regular inspections done before payments are made to companies, and then after it is done, there's also audits done. So I'm not saying that it's not, they obviously could still be cases, but I think the extent of it would much less than happen under the GUI's scheme. Mr. Chairman, turning to the issue of the bilateral treaty, as you know, after 1994, we entered into a range of bilateral treaties with countries to facilitate foreign investment into the country. Now, these treaties basically give the foreign investor a protection. If they do invest in this country, there is an obligation on the South African government to offer reasonable protection to these property. In this particular case, which was the first case we had, where the Swiss lodge owner, where because of criminal activity, burglaries and so on, the person was forced to, the person claimed that they didn't get sufficient protection from the state with regard to the protection of that property. The matter went to court in Switzerland. We are now, we've had only two cases out of almost over 100 treaties. We've only had two cases which has gone to the international courts, and this is the one we lost. The other one we were successful in. In this particular case, we are reviewing our treaties, and the one clause we are changing in all our treaties. Obviously, these are negotiations between two countries, but we are saying that the disputes around this treaty must be heard within South African courts. Because in this case, it had to go to a tribunal in Switzerland. As you can see, it was denominated in Swiss francs. And therefore, in terms of our new treaties, we are saying that if there are any claims, legitimate claims that foreign investors have under our treaty, they will pursue it through our courts. And that is the improvement we have put there. On the question of the prescription of debt, as I indicated, the DTI itself does not directly pursue the debtors. It is done by Department of Justice. But in terms of the law, usually the debts prescribe after 3 years if a claim is not made. And in the, as I indicated, in the GAI scheme, in the general incentive scheme, as I said, that wasn't debts in the technical sense. It wasn't a debt owing to us. It was that we discovered that companies had incorrectly or claimed money, or they were paid something which was not legally due to them. So, as I said, because it was done after, as I said, the payments started commence from 1990, and in 1995, the Minister of Trade and Industry launched this investigation into these claims. So, in a sense, many of the debts might have been incurred in, or the amounts might have been paid in 1990. It was then too late to recover some of them. But in conclusion, Mr. Chair, I think that we've noted the points, and as I said, we will hand over a full details of the 15 employees engaged in the where there was overpayments made to staff. Thank you.
Can I have them before the end of the week? Because I'm sure we'd want to look into this next week. And the 25,000 arbitration award, you also want that to be condoned by us, disciplinary case, that the department lost, which means you fired a person without following procedure or without any substantive reason for doing so.
I think if I understand, in terms of the separation of powers, we did have, as I said, we did. You're right. We did have an adverse award against us. I can look at the detail, but the amount was 25,000. And as I said, we obviously, because we did not in the normal course of events, if judgments are granted against departments, we have to pay. But it's just obviously that we exceeded. This was outside of our budget, and that's why it is deemed unauthorized.
Okay. All right. No, that's fine. We've had you. Can we go to the third one?
Honorable Chairperson, members, I'd like to report on the unauthorized expenditure of the Presidency. We had a SCOPA meeting last year on all of these items where it was discussed in detail. I think what was outstanding at that point in time is the reporting of the Presidency to National Treasury on the unauthorized expenditure, and also the recommendation of National Treasury relating to the unauthorized expenditure. Now, the total unauthorized expenditure for the 8-9 financial year is the total is 15.1 million, and the Presidency
reported 15.1 million.
As I said, all of these items were discussed in details in the previous SCOPA meeting. The over-expenditure, the 15.1 relates to an over-expenditure, which is classified as this unauthorized expenditure. It relates mainly to the payment of consultants to fix the asset register, and the Presidency did get a qualification on this asset register. It also relates to the payment of legal fees and also salary increases that was implemented and was approved by Parliament and was implemented by the Department. I think, and then all of that relates to the 15.1 million. Our assessment of this is that this unauthorized expenditure could have been avoided by the Presidency. And in consultation with the Presidency, we advised the Presidency that they need to put certain measures in place to prevent this from happening in future. Some of these items that led to the over-expenditure was presented in the adjustment budget, and money was allocated for those items. but there was still over expenditure. Our recommendation to this committee is that we should not condone the over expenditure of 15.1 million and that that money should be recovered from the presidency's baseline.
Boris, welcome.
Thank you, sir. My apologies for being late. We had another meeting at 9 o'clock. So just a technical question about the makeup of the 15.1 million. Is the salary increase for the minister and the new and the salary for the new minister, aren't those direct charges and should be excluded from the amount? It sounds a little bit unfair that if there's a salary increase for the minister and if a new ministerial position is created and you could have paid them, that it should penalize them for extra expenditure. Maybe we can just get some explanation on the question of direct charge or not. Thank you.
Honourable Member, just to answer, at this point it's not a direct charge. It comes from the presidency's budget. It's not a direct charge.
Yeah, his question is why should it not be a direct charge?
Well, Dora, to assist you, I think if you look on page one, the presidency had had an additional amount of 10 million as well as a rollover of 7 million, which should come to 17 million, which, unless of course they would like to talk to that, or National Treasury can expand to that, because it seemed to be their contention that with that 17 million, they should have been able to cover that 15.1 million. Dambi?
On page 2 of the report, I see the 15 million. Yeah, it's on page 2 of the report where it's signed underneath. I see, say, the total unavoidable expenditure is 15 million, but your recommendation is talking about 14.5. How do you tally the two numbers? What is what here?
There was some discrepancy between what was reported in the Auditor General's report and what was reported by the Presidency in their letter. And our recommendation is to go with the AG's report, and that's why our recommendation is in for the 14.5 million.
But, I mean, were you unable to reconcile the figures with the President?
We were able to reconcile it. We were able to reconcile it, Honourable Chairperson, with the presidency, and the presidency agreed to the 14.5 million.
Please, can we have whoever's phone on off? Please. So you say you were able to reconcile the figures to 14.5. But then why should we have 15.1 if you were able to reconcile? Because whatever you have reconciled, what you should bring to us should be what is final, what is reconciled, what is agreed between you and the President.
Okay, I think we included what the presidency reported just for information purposes, but our assessment was on the 14.5 million.
All right. Can we hear from the president?
No, I'm with Steven from the National Treasury. The figures were reconciled. If you look at the reports that you have, the 15 million, if you take the last, the environment, it goes to 14.5 million of the Auditor General's report. Thank you.
15.3 and 15.1 are not the same. On page 2 is 15.1. On page 1 is 15.3.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'll try to explain. In the before with the closure of the financial year for 2008-09, in March, the then accounting officer wrote to the Treasury and indicated that there's an expected over expenditure in the vicinity of 15,135,000. That was informing the Treasury that that's the expected over expenditure. However, after the Auditor General had concluded their business, and the final figure then came to the 14.5 million. So the initial amount was just we informed the Treasury that we expect that there's going to be an over expenditure, but the actual over expenditure after the Auditor General had completed their audit came to the amount of 14.5 million as indicated.
Thank you. As long as you are agreed that this is the actual amount, so that we're also certain which amount are we supposed to be dealing with. Any other questions, comrades, before we pass this one? Yes.
Chairperson, where the difference between the two amounts, what's the difference on? What expenditure is which brings the difference? The presidency. I am referring to.
No, just hang on. I have not referred it to them yet because I was trying to look at what you are asking, so that when they respond, I could be able to follow. Just a minute. Are you able to find the variance? What led to the variance? Yeah.
I can try to explain that the variance is in terms of the environment rules that were applied. On some of the programs there were savings and over expenditure on the others, and we did apply the environment rules. And after applying environment rules, the amount of 15.317 was then reduced to 14.5. The environment was for the amount of 806,000.
Right. Chair, thank you very much. We heard from Home Affairs earlier that if we don't condone the amount, it will have an impact on the operation of the department. I trust this would not be the case in the case of the presidency. 15 million rand is a drop in the ocean. So this recommendation, I don't know if the presidency and National Treasury have had consensus on the recommendation that's been put before us.
I don't think consensus is the prerequisite. It doesn't have to be a consensus on any of the recommendations that National Treasury makes.
Yeah. The thing to understand is to say now the recommendation that Treasury is giving, submitting to us, is this the 14.51 million or the 15.135 million? Maybe, yeah, I'm beginning to understand.
It's that the 14.5.
The 14.51.
Yeah.
And then I would like to also understand these figures that I raised individually, like farewell to the president was to mandate to the two previous presidents of what the 2 million part of it. The consultation, want to understand the value for money part of this thing. I think it needs to be explained to us so that we understand what is it all about.
Who was the former president? I'm sure it's one former president.
Yeah?
No, it says farewell to the former president. So it's one.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The former president included a former deputy president and a former minister.
it was one function.
I would like us to move on, Comrade, because you recall last year in the hearing, we asked for an explanation. It was given to us, including on the legal fees. It was given to us, and I made sure it is sent to all members. So we can go and refresh on our documents. Right, can we pass this one, Comrade? The consultants, the 2.3, the value for money, are they still there, or do we now have internal capacity to manage our assets?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. So we did have value for money. In the subsequent audit reports, we've not received any form of qualification or even emphasis or matter on the assets again. So we did get, and we have created some internal capacity to deal with this matter.
Good. All right. Can we move to the next report, Department of Defense and Military Veterans Affairs? But this was still the Department of Defense.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll be reported on the unauthorized expenditure of the Department of Defense. The total amount under discussion is 60.918 million rand. Now, mine dates back from 1998-99, but this matter has been dealt with by the Portfolio Committee in 2003. I will just take it from the top. The military veteran museums that were funded by the Department of Defense, there were no legal authorization for that. And the committee recommended in 2003 that approval by Parliament of the amount be deferred until the passage of the relevant legislation. Now, the legislation was passed. Therefore, we don't have a problem with recommending that this amount now be authorized as a direct charge against the revenue fund. The next issue is the hiring of photocopiers and repair of furniture. Tender procedures were not followed. This was also dealt with by the committee in 2003. The committee recommended that they will decide on what should be happening with the amount once the matter has been dealt with in the court. Both these issues were basically kicked out by the court due to the lack of evidence. In these two instances, we recommend that the amounts be funded by the department, but within their own budget, because we foresee that it was not a loss to the state because these machines were actually hired and used. The last thing here that I want to discuss is the peace support operations in 2003 and 2004. That's the only new one that came up. 40.293 million was unauthorized. The president ordered the peace support operation close to the end of the financial year. The department didn't budget for this money, and we suggest that this amount be authorized as a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. So we have four parts to this report. The first one deals with the funding of military museums, which is 15.1 million. That National Treasury suggests that it must be approved as a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund, as well as the 40.2 million for peace support operations, which should also be approved as a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund. And we have the 5.9 million for the contract for hiring of photocopiers, as well as the 17,000. Is that 17,000? 0.017 million. How do you pronounce that, Pretoria? 17,000. All right. Yeah. Are there any questions? Yes, Tim?
Chair, thank you very much. I just have a question to the department with regard to the peace support operation. And while the president must have decreed that this exercise be carried out, I mean, does a protocol exist now between the department and the presidency so you don't have these ad hoc instructions to do A, B, or C, and then the department that's asked to do it doesn't have the funding? So is there some kind of protocol that exists now to prevent this kind of thing happening? And budgeting for peace operations.
I'm sure that can be responded to by the Secretary of Defense. Yeah. Can you talk to that, ma'am?
Honorable Chairperson and honorable member, thank you very much for the opportunity. We have indeed, in engagement with Treasury, discussed and are finalizing an arrangement which will allow us to finally conclude a contingency budgeting mechanism which allows for the proper planning for peace support operations. We have, in our development of that, used projections from previous years to estimate the average cost of peace support operations. Whilst this model is not fully predictive of what may happen, particularly with respect to our...
Can we please, in the name of God Almighty, ask you to check your cellular phone and switch it off? Please, just switch off your cellular phone. I mean, if we find you, we'll ask Commissioner Moyana to take you along. Yes.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Our basis for motivation for the establishment of a contingency...
Just hang on until that phone is off. Because whatever you are saying will not be recorded. So. All right. Let's try and see if we can continue with this discussion.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. The basis of the elements that will constitute the contingency funds will principally be driven by our estimation of projected requirements for our interventions in various parts of the continent. Chairperson, we know that this is not a predictive model, but we think the recent experience and our own threat analysis is able to give us clear indicators of what would be a reasonable budget over the MTF for this contingency. In addition, Chair, we have had several occasions under which the Department of Defense has been called upon to respond to cases of emergency, not only on the continent, but also in South Africa. We recall very specifically the intervention by the Department of Defense during the public service strike last year, during which period we were required to bring particularly the SNDF into hospitals and various areas of critical services. It is that we would like to include in that contingency fund, and our agreement with Treasury is that in this current consideration of MTF of financial year 12-13, a component of the defense budget will contain this element called a contingency budget, which will specifically refer to these issues. The second issue, Chair, in this particular issue is there is current discussion about finalizing the protocol in relation to what the Constitution places as the responsibility of the Commander-in-Chief and the processes relating to the authorization of deployment of the SANDF. The issue here relates specifically to the right for, which is bestowed by the Constitution, of the Commander-in-Chief, and the current processes that included cabinet and consultation with the Minister of Finance, which in fact would have resulted in this. We think that the contingency fund will overcome the issues around how Treasury specifically gets an instruction to finance a peace support operation. We hope we would have put this issue to rest with that contingency fund and its proper management over the years in order to plan properly for peace support operations.
Well, thank you very much. Indeed, we see that you are assisting with the sending donations to Somalia. We hope it will be managed within your limited resources, and I'm sure that contingency planning will not, you know, be internally focused but also external. I think it does respond to the question. Any other question?
Yeah, just a simple question. How do we get convinced that this letter comes from the minister? It doesn't look like a genuine letter, no signature. I'm not sure whether we can get convinced that it indeed is the ministerial letter. Because anyone, including myself, I can say Minister Swanewane, but I can't sign like the Minister Swanewane.
I'll verify. All right. Yeah.
I'm thinking about the expenditure on the contract for hiring the photocopiers for 1998 and 1999, which amounted to 5.9 million. What I would like to find out is if there could have been other means, like of buying the photocopier instead of that contract of hiring that is so exorbitant. Have you looked into, or were other means looked into in comparison for this amount?
Thank you very much for that particular question around the photocopying in this particular case. Directly in response to the question that is asked by the Honourable Member, the particular transgression here relates to a colonel in the army who unlawfully concluded a rental contract with a particular company. Now, the current practice in government is really for areas such as photocopiers to be engaged upon on the basis of operating leases rather than purchase, simply because of the existence of transversal contracts that are held by National Treasury for the whole of government, which benefit all government departments. The option to basically purchase photocopiers directly seems to be a financially imprudent one on the basis of what happens with the technology and the requirement for maintenance of photocopiers.
Yeah.
And that's why the transversal contract actually exists, to ensure that photocopiers are leased, maintained, removed, repaired at the cost of a contractor rather than the cost of the department. And that's why the operational lease actually exists for all government departments through National Treasury. It's an area where a government department would not make the choice to purchase directly, just given the capacity requirements to then take full responsibility for the elements that are related to maintenance, repairs, and for something that is not the core business of a government department. Thank you.
All right, can we move to the next report?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
I'm going to brief the committee on the unauthorized expenditure incurred by the Department of Correctional Services in 2008-2009. It amounts about 483.8 million and it relates to compensation of employees. It emanated from the huge spending that occurred on overtime. During that particular year, the department spent about 1.2 billion on overtime. This followed the implementation of the public service coordinating bargaining council resolution 1 of 2007. In terms of the recommendation, National Treasury recommends that the amount be charged against the budget of the department. Our argument for that, firstly, National Treasury allocated additional funding to the department for implementation of the seven-day establishment. This was meant to phase out over time and to ensure that the centers are manned 7 days a week. The first allocation was made during the 2005 MSF process, and an amount of 255 million was allocated for spending in 2007-2008. During the 2007 MSF process, additional amounts were again allocated for this same purpose, about 228 million for 2007-2008, 222 million for 2008-2009. And 96 million for 9-10. But then the seven-day establishment was only implemented in 2009. So if the department had implemented the seven-day establishment earlier on, the spending, this huge spending that occurred on overtime could have been avoided. The second point is, the department became aware of the potential overspending as early as the first quarter of the financial year. And also National Treasury warned the department several times throughout the year against overspending. But then when we did an analysis of the environment that took place during that particular year, we note that not much was done to try and reprioritize within the baseline to avoid that that overspending. According to the annual report, the overspending occurred because the National Treasury did not allocate additional funding for implementation of Resolution 1 of 2007. But then during the 2008 MSF process, an amount of 165.2 million was allocated for implementation of that resolution. And also, I think it should be noted that, you know, when a department requests for additional funding, it's not automatic that it should get that additional funding because there are so many government priorities that need funding. So we recommend that the amount be charged against the budget of the department. Thank you.
Thank you. Comrade Smith, welcome. Sure. All right, any large second question? Dyer, Singh, and who else? I wanted to make sure you are the last. Oh, okay. Doras will be the last. Yes, Dyer?
Mr. Chairman, I want to highlight one or two sentences in the report. Under point three, it says an analysis of the events that led to the unauthorized expenditure shows that the department could have prevented its occurrence. So there's clear, you know, indication that there was a willful disregard of procedures, available procedures or instructions, and this, it could have been prevented. And then furthermore, the huge spending of the $1.2 billion on overtime was mainly due to delays in the implementation of the seven-day establishment. So there was a new rule that should have been implemented, and it wasn't. So again, a disregard, willful or otherwise, of implementing a new arrangement. And then furthermore, in paragraph 4, throughout the 2008-2009 financial year, the National Treasury monitored and then advised the department accordingly to avoid unauthorized expenditure. So they weren't caught unawares. It's not something that they didn't foresee, that they couldn't anticipate. They were warned throughout the year, and yet it still happened. And then the last line in that same paragraph, if the department had made an effort to implement cost containment measures and reprioritize accordingly, the overspending could have been prevented. Mr. Chairman, now this is all history. It's water under the bridge. And as SCOPA, we might, you know, have no choice but to go along with the recommendation. But we can go further, and I suggest that we do that, that we call the Director General, whoever was the Director General at that time, the responsible person, to come and account to this committee for willfully disregarding suggestions and directions from the National Treasury in spite of alternatives available, overspent to this amount.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to follow on Honorable Drea, what we'd like to know, I think, who was negligent? Who didn't do what they were supposed to do? And then why did this negligence take place in not ensuring that the seven-day establishment was implemented as quickly as possible? And the National Treasury say they warned the department several times. Maybe somebody from there should be behind bars for not following the instruction. But my second question, Chair, is on the recommendation, where National Treasury is recommending that be charged against the budget. I mean, this is $483 million, and we'd just like the DG or the Commissioner to tell us what impact will this have on the operation of the department. Will it be a once-off baseline, or will it be staggered like we've had other recommendations?
If we decide that it must be a charge against... It's still a recommendation. Okay.
Treasury is recommending that it comes off their budget. So I want to know what impact will it have.
Okay.
If any at all.
All right. AMA.
I'm Member Ngwenya. Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. I think the two speakers have covered me. I was wanted to ask the question of what was the delay of the department in terms of the implementation of this 7 days establishment. Because in this document, it shows that this overspending was done because the delay of implementing this 7 days of establishment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I'm really covered by Mr. Singh. I also wanted to know what the impact would be on the current and new budget of the department if you do subtract that amount suddenly from the budget. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner?
Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee and SCOPA, thank you very much for affording us this opportunity to respond to the proposal that has been made by National Treasury. I should think it is important for us to contextualize the situation with respect to the amount under reference of $183 million. I would like to indicate that overspending resulted mainly with the implementation of Service Coordination Budget Bargaining Council Resolution of Number 1 of 2007. And that in itself, if you look at it properly, it was also underpinned by another factor, that the signing of the BAB resolution effectively negates the gains of the previous departmental negotiation with the resolution number 2 of 2005. This was with respect to the issue of overtime that we're paying to our members with respect to Saturday and Sunday and including public holidays. And we had supported and indicated that if we don't pay this amount of money, we would give our officials time off so that we don't have financial implications in this regard. But be as it may, Chairperson and members of SCOPA, the provision made in terms of the DBC Resolution Number 2 of 2005 has, however, overridden by the new PSCBC Resolution Number 1 of 2007, which required that employees be compensated for the work done on Saturdays, Sundays, and holidays. without option of granting time off. That I should think is very important. The second, the resolution of 2007 after the major strike that occurred in the country. It meant, I repeat, employees be compensated for the work done on Saturdays, Sundays, and public holidays without an option of granting time off as provided previously by the resolution number 2 of 2005. Indeed, noteful of this particular phenomenon, in 2007-08 financial year, two Treasury Department's approvals were requested from National Treasury to shift funds from payments of capital assets to compensate on employees in order to fund the budget shortfalls, resulting from the implementation of Public Service Coordinating Gap Bargaining Council Resolution No. 1 of 2007. That being the case, the department was faced with two challenges at the time. One, the unfunded impact of the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council Resolution No. 1 of 2007 and a very high abnormal inflation rate to which funding had not been received in the 2008-09 financial year budget baseline. In this regard, a cabinet memo was submitted requesting an additional allocation of 543 million. We have documents to this effect, which we shall give the committee. The decision was taken down to manage expenditure and reprioritize the budget to be able to fund the impact of the inflation on goods and services, and only submitted to Treasury cabinet memorandum with regard to the shortfall. This request of 543 was not approved. Chairperson, the severe budgetary cuts in 2008 and 2009 and 2010 financial years only aggravated the problem much further, in that the department had to once again curtail other services to fund the cumulative effect of the inflation, and this made the situation very difficult to manage. The department was left with no option or choice but to reprioritize the remaining budget to survive the high inflationary processes environment, for example, where food integration was very high in our facilities. But to conclude this, although a decision was taken to fully implement the seven-day establishment from April 2009, in line with the 300 million additional funds allocated as indicated here, the challenge was that no agreement had been reached. I repeat, no agreement had been reached in the General Public Service Sector Bargaining Council or the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council Chambers regarding the implementation of the seven-day establishment. Relief from the commitment was eventually reached in terms of the GBC Resolution No. 2 of 2009. What were the outcomes of this? First, that the 2008, 2009, and 2009 submissions were made to National Treasury. The expenditure status report as 2009-2008 June was submitted to National Treasury. Three, we did submit a cabinet memorandum which was sent to request additional funds required to finance the unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure resulting from the implementation of this agreement. But I want to indicate here, Chairperson, that the cumulative effect, if this was to be paid from own resources, to have serious impact in the operations of the organization, per se. We want to indicate that the Public Service Resolution No. 1 of 2000 put a large amount of money into the pockets of our employees in terms of overtime. And the implementation of the seven-day establishment, in this particular case, from the 1st of April 2008, would have meant that the removal of overtime and a big loss of income for officials. And thirdly, it was therefore not possible to implement the seven-day establishment without bridging the income loss gap. Because bear in mind, our officials were used to the overtime that we're getting for Saturday, Sunday, and holidays. Consequently, this would have created a labor relations nightmare for the department. Finally, the labor organization needed a carrot, in this instance, to sign an agreement on the full implementation of the seven-day establishment. Consequently, the OSD was used as an opportunity to bridge this income gap while at the same time introducing a career pathing scheme that would support the implementation of the white paper. So we find it very difficult, Chairperson, that National Treasury proposes that we should be able to pay this from our own resources, and would therefore request that it will have serious implications in the operation of the organization currently, from security, from running the processes and programs of the department, because it would mean therefore curtailing some of the major activities within the organization. But be as it may, these are the reasons which led to the shortfall and the overspending of 183 million. That had to be curtailed within the organization. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. As you recall, you remember when we had the hearing with the department, we exhausted this matter. But there's just one thing that I just want to get the clarity from the National Treasury. What was the reason that the Treasury couldn't approve the budget which was submitted to them? I can't find the reason. I think it's the same matter. We asked about it last year when we had a hearing, but I'm not convinced really about the reason. What was it? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. During the 2000, I'm not sure of the request that the Honourable Member is talking about, but I'll just talk about the two requests. During the 2008 MDF process,
I just want to give clarity. There was an amount of 544 million which was not approved by Treasury, and the reasons really were not satisfactory. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. During the adjusted estimates process of 2008-09, the department got about 460 million to boost its personnel expenditure. So when the department says they didn't receive any money, I'm not sure what they are really saying. And also, during the 2008 MTEF process, the department received about 165.2 million for the implementation of Resolution 1 of 2007. So, to say the department did not receive any additional funding, I don't think it's true.
Yeah. Chairperson, I don't know whether it's a dispute, but as I recall, if you can go to the records of the hearing that we had earlier last year, even here, page 3, I think on the response by the department, when you turn to page 3, number 6, the last sentence, even last year it was said, even in the financial report, it was reported that National Treasury could not approve, and we asked for the reason, and we're still asking it now.
Well, I also want us to be mindful of the fact that if every department were to get everything that they want, we'll find ourselves in a situation of grief. No. Commissioner, I would like you to, so that we were able to clear this. There's an amount of 400 million, an amount of 100 million that you got. There's an amount that you requested. What did you get? What did you not get? Commissioner Moya.
Chairperson, allow me, if you may, allow me to deviate a bit in order to answer your question directly.
Maybe start by answering it directly and then take it. I'll be happy with that, so that I don't lose my, I don't get confused in the process.
Well, Chairperson, the CAB memo that we prepared, which is annexed part of the documentation that we would like to give with the committee, indicates on under point 7 and 8. The department has placed a moratorium on filling of non-critical posts as one of the measures to contain the expenditure. Letters have been written to all stakeholders in this regard. This has been done to secure savings in order to fund the cost pressure resulting from the implementation of the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council Resolution No. 1 of 2007. Organized labor already indicated dissatisfaction with the decision of the department to impose the moratorium on filling of vacant posts. Failure to fill vacant posts would also have a negative impact on service delivery, which is undesirable. Hence, the funding is being requested to finance the financial implications resulting from the implementation of the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council Resolution No. 1. What were the financial implications, Chairperson? The total amount shortfall of the compensation of employees budgeted is estimated $1 billion. The main cost driver would be the implementation of various occupational service dispensation for various specialized occupational groups. National Treasury allocated an amount of $460 million in the month of August 2009 to ease the cost pressures on the compensation of employees. Taking into consideration an amount of $160 million already allocated by National Treasury in the month of August, the net budget shortfall in the compensation of employees reduced to $544 million, which is required to finance the implementation of the PSCBC Resolution No. 1 of 2007. And finally, the additional funding which will be required over the medium-term expenditure framework period to fund the implementation of this resolution has been submitted as part of the MTEF period of 2009. So there was material need for us to have an additional funding in order for us to pay for the shortfall.
Yeah, well, I thought you would have done simple arithmetic to say we asked for, you said $1 billion. What was the additional amount you requested? $1 billion. Instead, you got $400 million. So the shortfall was
$540 million.
And that's it. So we're clear about the numbers and the figures. Can we come back to Treasury? Are you able to talk to why didn't you give the additional $500 million as requested by Correctional Service?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think, you know, like you rightly said, you know, it's not possible for Treasury to give each and every department the exact amount of money that they request any time, because, you know, there are so many government priorities and there are resource constraints. It's not possible for each and every department to just approach Treasury, we want so much and we'll be able to release that amount of money. So really...
Right. Smith?
No, sir, I'm hoping to help this meeting with the question that you asked. What are the implications if we agree with the recommendation from Treasury? And I don't want to get into why and why not. I think members are adequately dealing with that. Chair, as we speak, if this recommendation was agreed to, the reality is that it's not going to be deducted off salary or overtime. What will happen is we will feel the effect in service delivery. That's the reality. It's not going to be on salary and overtime. It will be on service delivery. And this department can hardly afford to lose one more cent on service delivery. As a committee, we, on a monthly basis, with a fine-tooth comb, go through the expenditure of this department to ensure that where there can be savings, there are savings. So for whatever it's worth, Chairperson, I think that to agree with Treasury at this point would be something that we would come to regret. This is a security cluster department. And we already know what is happening with the inability or otherwise with this and other departments that deal with security in our country currently. So my own appeal would be that SCOPA condones the unauthorized expenditure. And that hopefully our intervention as a committee of meeting with them on a quarterly basis will assist going forward. But I want to appeal against 400 million being taken off this department, because it's going to directly affect service delivery and the security of the country. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Mashiane, Chilwane, and then Pretoria, have a question. Sure.
Chairperson, I want to make a request to the lady from National Treasury who's been trying to explain to us here. What you're saying that when a department asks for something, it does not mean that they will get it. Does not, to me, give us the reason, the exact reason why National Treasury is refusing. Can you do us a favor and explain to us why National Treasury is saying what you are saying now? Not just to say we can't give you money, or any department that is looking for money must be given money when they ask for it. A tangible reason why you are saying what you are saying. Thank you. I want to be convinced where I'm seated.
Right. I'll give you. Just read on the National Treasury submission, item number 3. Commissioner.
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you. It's just a rider on what Honorable Mashiane has said, to say that, but even if the National Treasury will not give additional money to departments, not to all departments, but by implication, in a later stage, we'll have to have a kind of this meeting to say now that we are condoning. And then what do we do? We don't give them money, but we come back again.
No. They requested 1 billion, and they were given 400 million. So it's not as if they were not given anything. So I want us to start from there and say they didn't get all the money they wanted. It's not as if they were not given money.
We want the reasons, and we're not getting the reasons. That's the fact of the matter. We want the reason, not getting the reason. We're not saying that they didn't get anything. But as Honorable Smith has just said, that amount, that is not, it has got an impact. I think Mazara Chatterson may be true to express maybe our views and understanding in this matter.
No, correct. We're just engaging on it. And hope that members are also aware that the president had requested 40 million. They only got 10 million. And members have not asked why was it not given the 30 million. So I just want us to be Pretorius.
Chief, I could just get back to the question which Mr. Smith also referred to. That's the impact of the 480-odd million. My question is, if the department does not get that money and has to be deducted from the salary, and there's a possibility that might happen, have you as a department sat down...
The money deducted from?
From the next budget. As a part of the next budget.
Okay.
And as opposed to a direct charge.
All right.
That's the effect of it. My question is, have you sat down and did some planning to determine exactly what services will be curtailed? It's easy to say there will be less service delivery, and we accept that there must be... there will be an influence in service delivery, but what exactly will we not see that we are seeing now? Certainly there are capital expenditures in the pipeline which could be curtailed, which could be delayed. Are there things like that which could be kept back, for example, that you don't have to do it next year? What exactly will you be forced to cut down on if you don't get that money?
Chairperson, I think there's no doubt that money had to be spent due to circumstances beyond the control of the department.
Not necessarily.
I'm making a statement there. But what we need to be convinced on is that this money, was it directly used to meet these salary requirements? What is the quantum? For me, I think the question is the quantum that needs to be determined. But the principle that they had to spend money, we don't know how much, which they had not budgeted for, I think I accept that. It was beyond their control that they had to spend. But it's the quantum. Did they take that money, or are they now asking for this money and they used it for something else? We don't seem to know that from Treasury and from them. And maybe there needs to be some work done in that regard. They could have used it to do whatever.
All right. I think maybe let's cut to the bull. Let me allow you, comrade, to make an input, and then I'll make an observation. If that can assist us to zoom in on the key issues, then we'll do so.
Thank you, comrade. I think that the response to the question that says why would Treasury not give the money that is requested by a department would assist all of us, not this particular department.
Yeah.
Because our understanding is that the budget, the financial resources are the financial implication of the mandate that is given to the department. And without that, you cannot then approve a mandate and say it is correct for you to employ so many people and have a salary angaga, and then you do not finance that. In the same way, in transport, you would say it is okay for transport to provide infrastructure. We are mandating you to provide infrastructure, but we are not willing to fully finance you to carry that mandate. We would want to know the reasons, not just it's a norm, because the response comes across as if it is a norm that you will not be given what you are requesting.
All right. I think there are two elements to it, comrades. Firstly, I think maybe, comrade Ben, we have sharpened the focus to say in the analysis of National Treasury, what were the specific considerations that were taken into account when that decision was made? But secondly, Commissioner Moyan, from your side, because the note from National Treasury says that you could have done something. I think that's the point that should be brought very sharply into focus to rebut that you had no room for maneuver. You responded, and from what I heard, it's like you were between the rock and the hard place. That is, lack of money and the unions on the side. And to avoid an industrial nightmare, you decided to go this route that led to this. And I think that's the point that comrades need to take into account, so that it's Treasury has a perspective that says there was a way in which you could have gone. So that we don't have the police coming next time saying we also have an over expenditure. If you don't approve it, the country will be insecure. So departments in that cluster can do as they wish, knowing that because they're in the secret cluster, will be forced to approve their own expenditure. So there is need to drill the explanation from correctional services in a way that emphasizes the fact that they had no way out, and we could then understand and see their point and say, but National Treasury, how could you be so unreasonable? And take into account that all other government departments had to implement that OSD, not only correctional services. Yeah, can we get from National Treasury a response that talks to the specifics, so that it's not seen as a norm? Why? What? What?
What were the analysis that you made vis-a-vis correctional services that brought you to that conclusion that 400 million would do?
Before I answer, I raised the matter of the seven-day establishment, the delays in the implementation of the seven-day establishment right at the beginning. I haven't heard any arguments or reply to that. When the officials from the two departments reply, if they can just give us some response on that delay in the implementation of the seven-day establishment.
I think when I first made my briefing, I mentioned the issue of the seven-day establishment, that there's no treasury from as early as the 2005 MTF process allocated additional funding for the implementation of the seven-day establishment. And the aim...
How much was that?
During the 2005 MTF process, about 255 million was allocated for spending in 2007-2008. And then during the 2007 MTF process, the amount of 228 million for 07-08, 222 million for 08-09, and 96 million for 19 were also allocated for the same purpose, for the implementation of the 7-day establishment.
How much was the last figure, 90?
96 million.
Okay.
So the argument is, if the 7-day establishment had been implemented as planned, the department would have not incurred this huge spending on overtime. What that plan was used for prior to the 2009 and 10 implementation of the 7-day establishment, we need to hear from the department.
Okay. Does that cover all of you? Or you wanted to make an addition?
The general budget process, there was a question from the honorable member, and I think it's worth noting for the purposes of the committee today. While National Treasury is the custodian of the budget, we analyze, we make recommendations on the budget requests of the various departments. The decision to allocate the funds is the responsibility of the Minister's Committee on the Budget. You know, it is a reality that departments do not get the full request and are not awarded that. We have limited resources. We make recommendations based on our technical expertise, on technical solutions for capital expenditure, incentive programs, job creation programs, and the like. And it is frequently, sadly, that departments do not get the full amount requested. But ultimately, the responsibility to make that decision falls upon the Minister's Committee on the Budget, who decide on the allocations, you know, as presented to the Cabinet. Thank you.
Okay, Commissioner Moyan, and then Congress Smith.
Chairperson, I would like to respond to the implementation of the seven-day establishment. This was a protracted negotiation between department and organized labor. And the final negotiation was agreed on the 24th of June 2009. And therefore, it is very clear that while this was supposed to have been implemented immediately, there had to be processes and procedures to put in place in order for us to reach this agreement. And the organization at the time had no other option. It had to deal with the issues of overtime. This is not an OSD issue. It was an overtime-based issue that led to this payment of this amount of money. So I should think we wanted to indicate that failure to do that would have had a serious problem within the organization. And this was a matter that was discussed in the resolution of 2005, and this was not concluded effectively, and therefore we needed to have an instrument to deal with this matter effectively.
Yes, Kumpri. All right.
Thank you, Chairperson. You will recall that I gave you the resolution of the Mandate Committee. This whole thing was approved on the premise that the 7 day would have been established within the overtime money. Now, we didn't take into account the trade union negotiations when we do our calculations. So, as far as we are concerned, the overtime money would have paid, because it was more than R1 million. I think they spent 1.2 or 1.3 billion on overtime. That would have covered the 7 days. And you must also remember that the defense had a similar problem that was not approved by cabinet. And they are now working off this amount over a period of time. So what we do for the one, we must do for the other as well. And it's a similar situation where we want the Department of Defense, many years back, they should implement measures not to overspend, and they haven't done it. They just refused. And I think the Department of Correctional Services just, they just refused to do anything. Thank you, Chief.
Let's see my knife, we can help.
Clarity seeking question.
So thanks, Chairperson. I think listening to both parties, they are forwarding very concrete reasons from the treasury point of view, for them to find no reasons to, you know, ignore the rules. It's very valid. But equally, from the corner that the correctional service are, you know, displaying that they were, you know, caught up in between the heart and the rock, maybe it might be appropriate for treasury now to say, we are not in a bargain, of course, but we are trying to find a way out of the situation we are caught up in. As much as they are recommending that, let the money be, you know, a bill against the Department of Correctional Service. Let's give them, you know, a hearing as to which particular program are they then saying this can be the program, because they are, you know, able to see what the department is having as of now. I don't think they are just saying let's bill against them on a blank chapter. I would want to hear from them. Do they have a program that they can then say, sitting where we are, billing against them, this is where they can get the money from? I think that maybe might help all of us, because the correctional service, they are pinpointing the area that might be, you know, put all of us in a disadvantaged position. Sitting where they are, possibly they might be seeing something. I don't think they're just saying bill against them in a way of compromising service delivery that is very critical on us. I wanted Chair to suggest that let's give Treasury an opportunity to speak to programs that can be, you know, used to deal with this, what we are talking about. If they can, of course.
Yeah, no, I think that will be unfair on National Treasury, because their starting point is that correction service was negligent. That's their starting point.
Yeah, I want to believe that I agree with you. And I'm sure when I was giving both parties reasons, I've acknowledged that both of them, they've got very genuine reasons. But we cannot just sit on the stalemate and say, because all of them, they've got genuine. I'm saying if they can. That's why I'm emphasizing if they can.
Think in the meantime. Think.
Chair, I need clarity from Treasury on this question that I'm going to ask, and comment from the Commissioner. I mean, Treasury says to us in their document that the Department received 460 million, and they shouldn't say they didn't receive additional money. We accept that. But then we heard from Treasury just now, which is nowhere in this document here, unless this totals up to that, that there was an additional amount for 7 day establishment in 07, 08, 08, 09, and 09, 010 of 255, 222, and 96. Now, was this additional to the 460 million And if it was additional funds that were given to the department, what would the commissioner's comments then be in regard to receiving money to offset this increase, the overtime money that you have to pay, particularly these three figures here?
Thank you, Honorable.
Let's start with the first question. If it's possible, are they, from where you're sitting, because you're looking at all the departments, are there possible areas in your view that you are looking at as possible areas of savings? Not under expenditure this time, of savings.
Yeah.
And then let's talk to the last one.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Let me admit that we didn't do an analysis to identify areas where the department can get the money that we have not done. We haven't done that. Our focus was just on you know, looking at the principles of effective financial management. You know, trying to follow the PSMA. We didn't really get into the issue of identifying the areas where the department can get the money. Then on the issue of the amounts that we allocated for the implementation of the 7-day establishment. The 222 million, the 228 million, and the 96 million, these were allocations that were made during the 2007 MTEF process. And the 460 million was allocated during the 2008-09 adjusted estimates process.
In the light of the response coming from Treasury, can one suggest that Both parties, we gave them an opportunity, of course, a minimal one, to go and sit and do analysis, and making sure that, of course, the law should be adhered to. We cannot sit here and condone violations of, the law and rules. Sitting and both of them look at where is the possible program that they can, do the saving and then pay the money without of course, compromising the security of the state. But I would want to encourage that, let that particular analysis be done through, sitting of the two parties.
Matladi?
I need to suggest that since we are asking Treasury questions that I don't think they might be having answers for right away, where they need to go and refer and bring some detailed information to the committee. Why don't we postpone some of the questions until the time when we would be having a bilateral with them as the SCOPA and the Treasury so that we iron out these things before we can finalize the matter of on unauthorized expenditure? Because I feel it is, we are going in circles, keep on asking questions, and then they don't have details. They need to go back and
refer. Thank you, Chair. All right. I'll give you that. Just one National Treasurer.
Chair, I think I would like to, I'm in favor of the suggestion which recommended that our Treasury officials discuss with the Department the matters of detail, find consensus on the levels of detail. The questions tabled by the committee are very difficult, and it requires a proper and due analysis. It would be constructive, it would be a productive use of time, and we're on standby today to address these detailed questions together with the Department of Correctional Services to provide the answers as required. We'd recommend that would be the best course of action. Thank you.
All right. One more.
Allow me to respond to the additional funding that was spoken about here for the three consecutive years. Those amounts were meant for the recruitment specifically of 8,311 officials. It had nothing to do with the issue that we're referring to here. It was for the 7-day establishment. So I just want to put that into context. Thanks, Chair.
But you see, Commissioner, what that means is that then you would not be having this huge problem of overtime, because then you would have had staff. Because right now we have this unauthorized expenditure because of the overtime payment. And what National Treasury is saying is that you could have prevented that from happening. I thought you, your line would be to clarify that there was no way you could have avoided this. I think for me, that's where we should pin it down to. So that if we see it your way, that indeed there was nothing you could do, like you're saying, then we'll probably say, how do we look at it differently? But if National Treasury proves to us that you could have done something, like they're saying, then we'll see National Treasury's way. I think for me, that's the point that you should focus on squarely. Was it unavoidable? Was it avoidable?
Chairperson, that was unavoidable. This amount
and of and money... I think Commissioner, you have the platform to be as detailed as possible so that we can understand things from your way. And see things your way, or at least have a sense of where you are at.
Chairperson, that was unavoidable. This was not meant to pay, it was to recruit the additions, but the issue of overtime still remained in the organization. I should think that's the issue that I wanted to drive the point here.
So the 2007 agreement was retrospective?
Yes, we had not...
It was retrospective.
Exactly.
All right. Can we, Commissioner, can we take this route of further engagement with National Treasury beyond this meeting? I just want to stress engagement with National Treasury with a clear understanding that in terms of the letter of the law, Correctional Services overspent. That's the long and the short of it. In terms of the letter of the law, Correctional Services overspent. But we are saying, what were the circumstances? How do we work around that? So that your engagement should be fruitful. We don't want you to meet there and everyone digs their heels, say no, we are right, this and that. Otherwise, it will not assist us. We want to be of assistance to departments, but also want to assist the country. But we don't find ourselves in the same situation as these other countries in the world. Our levels are not yet that bad, but we have a responsibility to ensure that we act in a way that assists to pull us further and further away from the brink in this trying economic time. Comrade Smith?
Chair, in agreeing to the way forward, can we just add that Scope insists on a time frame, because this matter is the reason for the qualifications in this department. Now, we have to finalize this thing one way or the other. Otherwise, this department continues to have qualified audits year on year on a matter that, if push came to shove, politicians must take a decision on. So I think we need to give Treasury and Correctional Services a time frame to come back to yourselves, failing which we must take a decision politically. To avoid a continuous qualification on a matter that occurred 3 or 4 years ago, Chairperson. That's my only appeal.
Thank you very much. How much time would you need? I'll be happy if by Tuesday would have a sense of what has happened.
Thank you, Chair. That's acceptable.
Bamoya, stop whatever says. All right. Okay. Can we go to Can we go to the last one, transport? Again, is there anything you...
Maybe even in transport, they have got the same problem.
No.
I just wanted to know. I don't say they've got them. Because I wanted to say, if they've got such problems, then they'll have to go and sit down with Treasury and thereafter come to us and tell us what it is that they've decided. Right?
Well, let's hear them first. Can we get the presentation on transport?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, all the honourable members. It's 1 minute to 12. The matter in transport speaks to unauthorized expenditure of 1.2207 billion rand. That's 1,207.374 million. It speaks to the over expenditure on bus subsidies in the 2008-09 financial year. The department was taken to court by the South African Bus Operators Association in 2008-09 and was instructed by court to pay the outstanding bus subsidies. Some of that money was paid in 8-09 and the rest in the 19 financial year. The National Treasury believes that this over-expenditure is due to the lack of implementation of remedial policies as well as the lack of taking appropriate steps to prevent this expenditure. And if I may, Chair, I will just elaborate a little bit. These issues were addressed to the Minister of Transport in 2009 in a letter where we indicate to the department that despite the department's claim that there's been no additional money to the subsidies, that 1.5 billion additional money was allocated between 2003-04 and 2005-06. The strategic plan of the department indicated that from 2003, between 2003 to 2007, that the department would rationalize these services, change the contract from pay-as-you-go monthly contracts to tendered contracts or interim contracts, as I call them. The agreement was that because these competitive contracts were quite expensive, the department would look at the rationalization of routes, review the subsidies, target subsidies, and devolve the function for a more efficient service. However, despite additional funding towards this restructuring, developing a tender model and rationalizing services for effective monitoring and management, none of the above was actually implemented. The department had ample space to reprioritize funds towards bus subsidies. The average annual growth in this budget was 33.2% over the period of 2005-06 to 2008-09. However, we see that the baseline in this allocation for this program was reprioritized away from public transport program towards administration. There was a lot of reprioritization up to 311 million. However, this did not go towards bus subsidies. 4.6 million of this was wired away from this program. Within the baseline growth in 2007-08, the Treasury allocation allowed for a growth of a baseline of 5.5%. The department in that specific bus subsidy line increased the baseline by only 4.6%, hence reducing directly the allocations to the bus subsidies. The previous minister indicated that this shows a failure. The department also showed a failure to distinguish between contractual obligations of the department and additional policy objectives. Some members asked earlier about the request from the department. This department can request up to 100 billion rand additional funding per year. The outcome of this review in terms of the department's management of the bus subsidies showed a non-compliance with Section 38 and 39 of the PFMI. Subsequent to the court case, the Treasury did allocate and specifically earmark funding towards the SPAS subsidy area to allow for a transition, which was agreed with the Portfolio Committee to create a conditional grant towards provinces and to devolve the function further towards local government as provided in the National Land Transport Act. There is a need for clarity on policies for operational subsidies, both in the road and rail sectors, for clear responsibilities and for key performance indicators to ensure efficiency of expenditure, management and regulation. Although the creation of the grant has been established and we have seen much improved expenditure and very little over expenditure, I think it's not even R1 million for the 2011-10-9-10 year. We are still working with the department on the subsidy level. In terms of the treatment of this issue, even though it's really big and difficult to deal with, the department did report in the 2008-09 financial years in the annual report as required by Section 40 of the PFMI. The department reported to the Treasury 2 months after the annual financial statements were tabled in Parliament, and this report was sent to Parliament a month later, so we dealt with the matter quite speedily. The recommendation from the Treasury is that the unauthorized expenditure is condoned and approved, as this expenditure was actually within the purpose of the program. It was actually spent on bus subsidies, and that this expenditure, as showed through the court case, is irreversible. We therefore require SCOPA to approve a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund of $1.207 billion, as this amount cannot be recovered from the budget of the department, which is a budget that is highly dependent on transfers, and those transfers go to areas that normally in the departmental budget is specifically and exclusively appropriated mostly for infrastructure work, and the minister, subject to parliamentary approval, will affect that direct charge in terms of Section 34. Thank you, Chair.
Any questions? Or clarity, yes, sir?
Chairperson, thank you very much, and thank you for the briefing. There are some specific recommendations and injunctions that Treasury are making here, particularly with regard to policy proposals and things like that. Do these exist at the moment? Are there policies, proper policies in place to regulate community transport subsidies as we move forward? And secondly, I note in the Treasury document that on page 37B, that although there was under expenditure of 5.7 million, one province overspent the amount allocated. And do we have any reasons, or can we be furnished with some reasons later on why that particular province overspent, by how much did they overspend? Because in my view, it would have been quite substantial, because there was, it didn't impact on the overall spending. And, those are basically the two questions I don't ask them.
You can respond to them. I thought the department should be better positioned to. But if you have answers, we can start from you, and if they have additions to make, especially the last one, they can be able to come in.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, there was action over expenditure in the 19 financial year on the conditional grant allocations. However, the grant was created as a Schedule 4 grant, which is a supplementary grant to the province. So, in essence, the province would have had to contribute to that over-expenditure. I think it was less than R1 million for KwaZulu-Natal. So it was a small amount. And as I say, the manner in which the grant was created stops any over expenditure to come back into the national revenue to become a liability for the department, because the liability is with the provincial departments to ensure that they supplement any additional subsidies which is not provided for through the grant. And as I said, it was a small amount. The department will respond, but maybe just to indicate that the National Land Transport Act does provide for the regulatory function to be devolved to local government, and I'm sure the department can give a detail around that. And the Treasury with the department has, through this current budget process for local government, insisted on quite a wide range of key performance indicators, specifically on the new integrated rapid transit networks. However, there has been some discussions with the department over the last year so that we develop a proper operational subsidy policy for all areas of public transport provision so that we can have more clarity in terms of the management and monitoring of that area.
Thank you, Chair. Just to add on the policy questions, I mean, the fundamental policy is our National Land Transport Act, which has been created for us to be able to locate public transport management at the municipal level. And we are busy with the process of assisting municipalities to build the capacity to manage this. At the moment, of course, there are discussions going on with some of the key metros so that they'll be able to do that. As far as the subsidy at the moment, as it is now, I think Marika explained that we give the allocations to provinces, and anything beyond that, the provinces will then have to augment. And that has enabled us to manage this budget better. And that's why you are not going to see over expenditure from the national side as we move forward.
All right,
Mr. Chairman, I've seen this report. It says in a letter to the Minister of Transport in April 2009 already, more than 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago almost. Several concerns were highlighted in this letter, and then I want to refer you to point six of, you know, points that were made in this letter, that the National Treasury is therefore of the view that the Department of Transport failed to comply with Section 38 and 39 of the PFMA, and in April 2009, the Minister of Finance therefore recommended that the Minister of Transport undertake an investigation into the apparent failure of the accounting officer to exercise effective financial management of the bus subsidy contract. On that point, I want to know, has this investigation in fact taken place? And if so, what was the outcome of that investigation?
Thank you, Chair. From the National Treasury, we are not aware that this investigation did take place.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. The letter referred to was a response to the letter the Department wrote to Treasury. It was in response. When we were projecting this over-expenditure and highlighting and conscientizing the National Treasury with the expectation that either allocations would be increased and so on. But then they responded in the manner they did. The fact of the matter, as Marisa has indicated, is that there was a court case and there was supposed to be compliance with the court case. Because when we were to overspend as a department, we stopped. Unfortunately, the issues were contractual and they had to continue. And on the financial side, it would have meant that the whole of South Africa would not have gone to work in November 2008 until March because the funds were exhausted. So, as a consequence of the direction from the judgment, which we were joined with the National Treasury, by the way, government was then forced to pay. So, the result is then that the accounting officer could not personally be held liable for the amount that were paid as a result of those consequences and decisions and judgments. So the long and short of it is that upon consideration of that, there was very little that the minister can do. In actual fact, the minister wrote to the presidency highlighting those kind of problems related to
our
subsidies.
No, that's fine. But is it fact that because the point from National Treasury is that we were in this messy situation because there were long delays in the implementation of remedial policy decisions. The fact that we're taken to court, well, we see that, but it might be a consequence of the fact that corrections had not been done in time. So when those people took you to court, they were correct because you had some contractual obligations.
Chair, with due respect, it is not a fact that we did not put the remedial action. The fact of the matter is that together with the National Treasury, as far back as 2002, we undertook a study to rationalize the very same interim contracts for purposes of converting them to tendered and negotiated contracts. Mm-hmm. And National Treasury is aware that the cost of the new designs came in at three times the cost of the current and the current services. So it was stopped because of those financial constraints. The policies that we're talking about, if we were to implement it even today, the resultant is that there should be huge financial injections into the system.
But then how did you manage the situation now? What has changed? Was it management? Was it change of policy? Because now there is no over expenditure anymore.
Basically, we have shifted the responsibilities to provinces. Let me put it that way.
They are managing it better.
The main problem is in the budget they have.
Okay.
And secondly, they converted, without addressing the bigger issues, they converted to negotiated contracts, which then said, it doesn't matter how many kilometers and routes you operate, this is the amount you are going to be given. Okay? So that's the essence. The transformation process is still required as we move forward.
But was that not the point that the arrangement should be converted into negotiated contracts all along? Is that not the point of delay that National Treasury is referring to? Not the bigger transformation agenda?
It was the conversion from the coupon-based system to a kilometer-based system.
That is what was delayed from
yeah.
your side?
Yeah.
Okay, so there is no disagreement. All right. Okay. Let me see. Okay, Dreyer and then Pretoria.
Mr. Chairman, it seems that we've left the best for the last, or the worst, depending on from what side you look at it. But this Department of Transport is really a shocker. And if we look at the report by National Treasury, it's a litany of willful and deliberate disregard of Treasury recommendations over years. I was actually quite exasperated reading it, over the years, every time, every sentence, every paragraph, it's a failure to implement the policy decision. It's they failed to meet a deadline. The result of the failure to improve the efficiency, failing to rationalize the bus subsidy, they failed to implement a strategic plan. They failed to comply with Section 39 of the PFMA. They failed to distinguish contractual obligations. And so it goes on and on and on. Mr. Chairman, this is extremely serious. At the end of the day, it's the taxpayer who pays, and if we charge to take this money from the department, then it's also the service, the ordinary citizen who depends on the services, service delivery services, that pays for this. I think it's high time that we call the people who are responsible for the department, running the department, the DG at the time, that we call those persons to come to SCOPA and we interrogate them and we hold them to account. And I think we should also investigate the possibility of laying charges for failing to adhere or non-complying with the PFMA and various other regulations.
All right. Pretoria?
Thank you, Chair. Now I can see why we're in the same party, because my line of question was just about the same, the initial part. My second part would be...
With whom?
My second part would be to say that despite all the recommended the allegations in the letter or the assertions in the letter that there were problems in the department, that they made mistakes here all over the show, the ultimate recommendation is to condone the full amount, $1.2 billion. Now my question is more a technical one to Treasury. Is it possible to split the amount, to say that the condonement as a direct charge is only X amount, but Y amount must be come off the baseline amount of the department for the next year? Because as it stands now, the department did all sorts of things, but they get off scot-free in the end. There's nothing that no penalty for not complying. This is the upshot of what happens here. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Honourable Chair, with all due respect, I don't know the contents of the letter because I'm not privy to it, but I wonder if the Treasury has also indicated in that letter that from 2005 we've been reporting and requesting additional allocations, and mainly because of this. In terms of the contracts themselves, the escalation clause was based on fuel and other related costs, which were on average 10.1%. And then the baseline, as Marisa was indicating, has always been on that program, increased by CPI related, 5.5% and 6%. Now, the fact of the matter is that the actual increase, which was contractual, was 10%. The amount additional to the baseline that we've always been getting was 5.5%. I think if that background was given, it would have been it could be showed that this has been anticipated and has been reported accordingly throughout the years until the backlog of the over expenditure became to where it was in 2008. Thanks, Chair.
All right. I don't want us to go back to correctional services. You expected 10%, you got 5%.
Yeah.
But then continued on the same route until we now have this $1.2 billion, and I think there's a point that is being made, and for me, that's where the department should actually come in. The point that is being made is that you did not do this, you delayed to do this, you delayed to do that, you delayed to do this. So we should be able to point out that no, we acted quickly. We acted firmly, we acted decisively to forestall this thing, but it was just outside our control. Because the point here, because National Treasury has prepared a note for us. It is not that letter. I think what she was referring to is just a quotation out of that letter. Otherwise, what we have here is a note on which they explain what happened up to the recommendation that they have made. Now, the issue is the replacement of the ticket-based contract with negotiated and tendered contract. That's the nub of the issue, the replacement. Was there a delay on your part, or do you think there was nothing you could do within the time that it happened? This was the earliest you could work around the issue. Because their point is, you delayed, and that delaying is the one that led to the unauthorized expenditure. And now you have devolved it; it's sorted out. But was there a delay on your part? Was there an overlooking of regulations, of legislation? I think, for me, that's the part that you need to hammer on so that we can be able to see it from your side, that no, there was no delay on our part, there was no negligence on our part. We tried our best to not not talking about the bigger transformation program or process that you undertook with National Treasury, but this part, converting the ticket-based contract with negotiated and tendered contracts. I think that's the leaking point, and that is where I thought you would focus on it and clarify. But what do you want to do?
To give you a background, for the conversion from a ticket-based system to a kilometer-based system, you needed to go through, number one, the development of transport plans. Right, that's one part which is critical. What are the challenges there? Matavata spoke of one of them, the fact that when municipalities are developing these transport plans, they showed that if you go out to tender, it will be three times the amount we have now. So you rather allow the operations, the existing operations, because if you were to invite new operators or even negotiate the existing ones, the amount you pay for the same route will be three times. And secondly, even the developments in the township or in our areas, the new routes which were not serviced before, which your plans now say you must service, which then also increased the amounts required for the subsidy. Okay, so that was a big challenge. But there was also a challenge because we could not proceed. Provinces could not proceed at the time because initially there was a challenge from one of the Capital Bus Company, which forced that you can't issue a new contract because you just have to have approved transport plans and so on. So the other thing is, Chairperson, but one of the things that it was allowed for...
From one of the...
Golden Arrow, yes. I always confuse it with Golden Arrow, the club.
No, it's fine.
Yeah.
I was sure it was one of the Capital Bus Companies.
No,
it's
not.
Oh, okay.
That's the one. The issue around the finalization of transport plans in municipalities. Even today, most of the municipalities have not finalized their transport plans. The second part, which was a bigger one, when there was an agreement for the conversion process, it was an agreement between government, that is the department, SAPOA, and the unions, which then stipulated certain protective conditions for the workers, right? And it allowed for a second round. When you have the new tenders, there needed to be a renegotiation of that agreement. That process took a long time because it was about how do you protect if you give a new tender, a new company bus operator comes in, how do you protect the workers of the previous bus company? And so on and so on. It's a detail. I won't go into those details. So the delays were about all of those things. We're not disputing the fact that the policy stipulated a particular process, and that's what Treasury is interpreting, right? And we agree that as I said earlier on, Chairperson was saying public transport must be located at the municipal level. We need to have municipal public transport system. That's where we're going. The challenge, which is what Treasury is saying, and that's where the differences and debates are, how do we move from where we are now to that system? And there are all sorts of dynamics, which makes you can't have a clear pipeline because you are dealing with personalities, that is labor, you're dealing with... increased investment required to assist that transition, investments which we were struggling to from Treasury's somehow, for understandable reasons and so on, we're dealing with the fact that you need to have municipalities which are ready to take these responsibilities and coordinate it properly. It's a complex process of transformation. And when that happens, you still require services. You still require to provide those bus services out there. And hence, that is what has happened. So what happened was that the National was continuing to provide those services based on this expensive, difficult to contain in terms of cost, the ticket-based system. And that's what has happened. So all that was done now is to say, let's work within what we have. Let's locate it in provinces and manage the budget as it is. But every day, Chairperson, I'm sure all of you as members of parliamentarians coming from various areas, the request and demand for additional services everywhere. And we're not able to respond as government. Partly because of underfunding, but also the fact that as you integrate these processes, all these kinds of things are happening. So, Chairperson, in a nutshell, yes, there have been delays, but those delays are not caused by some bureaucrats sitting there not knowing what to do. We're managing this complex process, but it is a difficult process, and I think it should be understood in that context. So, for example, this issue about the accounting officer, the accounting officer before me, but what were you going to punish her for? Because she's managing a transition and so on. So my argument is that it's not a termination of truth of people. It's a complex process, and we're trying to manage that. And the Treasury, which is understandably so, they're saying you have a policy, implement the policy. We're saying yes, we're implementing, but there are all sorts of dynamics we're managing. So essentially, that's the situation, Chair.
All right. I would like us to bring it to a close, but Comrade Chair.
Thank you. I would want to put a position of the Portfolio Committee on Transport and how we deal with this matter. As much as we are dealing here with the issues of accountability and expenditure and compliance, it will be difficult for us to assess that and say, don't talk about the transformation process, because all that is happening is within that transformation process that we have to respond to. And it is in that understanding of the transformation process that members of SCOPA would then understand the rationale between the Department of Transport and the Portfolio Committee on Transport and Treasury. Because as much as there is a report that says the department has not done this, the department has not done this, the department has not done this, that performance of the department is informed by the conditions within which they have to perform and comply. And if there is no understanding of those conditions, then you would arrive at a situation where you are saying they have neglected their duties, whereas if you were to understand the conditions within which they were operating, you would not arrive at that situation. You would say, yes, they have failed to comply, but that has been caused by this situation, which the DG is actually explaining. The crux of the matter here is that you deal with a situation where you are restructuring the whole transport system. And in that process, the recommendation and the expectation is that move from the interim contracts and go to negotiated contracts. And if you just move to that, you then would end up with a much higher cost than the one you see now.
And for you not to arrive at that much higher cost, you then choose an option of delaying so that you are then able to create a conducive environment for you to move towards that negotiated contract. That is what I wanted to explain. Thank you.
All right. Are we all settled? Done.
Sure.
All right. Mr. Treasurer, thank you very much for making time. I'm sure you have all developed thick skins, because where monies are involved, will always, you know, be at each other's throats. But it is a necessary exercise. It's a necessary exercise that has allowed us as a committee to have context, not only in terms of what you have reported on, but also in terms of what the departments see and how they think and how they feel and what they wish to see happening. And I'm sure that by the time we sit on these matters next week, we will be in a position to take a perspective that is informed by your expert input, but also by the input from the department and the input from comrades. Thank you very much, comrades, for having made time, and Comrade Smith in absentia. I hope other comrades are also here so that they also say from our side as a portfolio committee, these are the things that we see from a policy perspective and how they impact on the finances of the institution. That assists us to have a holistic view of things. And comrades, thanks very much for being here. We meet next week. It's 10 o'clock. Thank you very much.
Rago,